welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, bringing you programs from the golden age of radio. Mark Levonier, your host for an hour of science fiction. Later on, a story on X-1 from 1957, but first a broadcast of Quiet Please called Northern Lights from January 30th, 1949 on ABC.
Quiet, please. Quiet, please. The American Broadcasting Company presents Quiet, Please, which is written and directed by Willis Cooper, and which features Ernest Chappell. Quiet, Please, for today is called Northern Light. This is a story about the temporal displacement of mass. It is also a story about teleportation. Do you know what those terms mean? No, I didn't think you did, but you stay right where you are, my charming friend, and you're quite likely to find out. You just stay right there and listen, and I'll tell you everything you want to know. And maybe a couple of things you're not terribly anxious to know. Ever see the Northern Lights? Aurora Borealis, is their right name? You don't see them very often below the 50th parallel of latitude in this country, but up in northern Minnesota and Canada, upper New York, places like that, they're quite common of a winter night. If you've seen them, you know what they look like. If you haven't, there's no use my trying to describe them. Sometimes they fill a whole northern sky with waves of color, like a fire burning way beyond the horizon. Sometimes they're just long streamers of fire filling up the whole sky. And another time they look like gigantic fringed curtains of pure light, swaying as if some cold cosmic breeze plucked at them. Way far off there to the north. And you can hear them, too, sometimes. Well, maybe not exactly hear them, but there's a sound, a humming, that crackling somewhere inside your head. And there are times when you'd swear it's a voice talking to you, talking in some kind of strange language you can almost understand, filling your whole being with a kind of desperate, inescapable terror. You know what I mean? At night, in the cold night, voices talking and saying things to you that you can almost understand, filling the night sky with signs and portents of inescapable terror. And nobody in the whole world knows what they are, nobody in this world at least, except me. And after I get done talking to you, you'll know too. And you won't be happy. Let me show you something now. This is from a recording I made on, December 13th, 1948, a little more than a month and a half ago. I started the recorder while Norman and I were just about finished with our work that afternoon here in the laboratory. I just set the microphone on top of the file cabinet there and turned on the machine. Listen, I'm going to play it back for you. The quality isn't so very good, but you can recognize my voice and Norman's, I think. Here.
I got the call. Rewound now, I guess.
Did you test it?
How can I test it when I say I just got a rewound?
Well, hurry up. It's almost 6 o'clock.
Yeah. Well, it's dark, but I didn't realize the time.
Hurry up.
I'm hurrying. Be a display tonight, you suppose?
How do I know? Been a display the last three nights.
Well, that was a dinger last night, wasn't it?
Yeah, the machine wasn't ready.
Hey, listen, now, do you think you can do better than I can? Ouch!
What's the matter?
Oh, I stuck my finger.
Where'd you put the copper sulfate?
Up above the sink.
Huh? I got it. What are you doing?
Testing the coil.
How's it?
Oh, it looks okay. Hey, wait a minute. Yeah, it's okay.
I'll be right with you. Hook it up.
What are you going to send?
You try my cigarette lighter. It won't work anyway. I won't miss it if we don't get it back.
I don't know how the thing will work when the northern lights aren't shining.
Maybe they are shining. Turn off the room light. Let's see.
All right.
Pretty early, I
What's the matter?
Hey, look.
Out early tonight. Oh, boy, that's fine. The whole sky. Look, blue and yellow. See, I never saw those long fringes before.
Never the same.
Oh, thank you. Turn on the recorder?
Yep.
Yeah, it's turning over. Let's see. Now is the time for all good men to come to the aid of their party.
Now leave it alone. You about ready now?
Well, it's funny about the aurora.
Northern lights?
Listen to this part closely, friend.
Oh, I don't know.
Remember what I told you.
You can almost hear the darn things. Not hear them, I mean, but it's kind of like somebody talking to you in a language you can almost understand. I don't know. I mean, did you ever notice it?
Sure. High frequencies, I guess. Something.
Awful lot we don't understand.
Look, you go over there at the recorder and talk into the mic.
Talk what?
Well, just describe what happens for the record.
I'm no announcer.
I know you're not, but just say what you see so we'll have an accurate record.
Okay. Now?
Go ahead.
This is an experiment in the temporal displacement of a solid object. In other words, the first actual demonstration of a time machine. If it works.
It'll work all right. Go on.
Paul is now placing his old beat-up cigarette lighter on the stage of the hypercucambulator, and he is now setting the microchronometer to determine how far into the future he's going to send the lighter. Well, how far, Paul?
10 seconds.
10 seconds. Now, at the end of that time, if our calculations are correct, and we hope they are, the cigarette lighter will reappear. In that period of time, it will have been into the future. We could send it farther into the future if we wanted to, I guess, but we'd just have to wait that much longer for time to catch up with it and make it reappear. But 10 seconds, we can prove our point by sending it 10 seconds into the future just as well as 10 years ahead, and this way we don't have to wait so long. Hey, how am I doing, Paul?
I go into your commercial.
When Paul presses the little button, the cigarette lighter will turn to nothing.
That's not right. It'll be here, but it'll be 10 seconds.
Now, listen closely, please.
Yeah. Well, now,
what's going to happen?
Mr. Paul McGillicutt, that famous mad scientist, is about to press the big old button and send his lighter into the future. You ready, Paul?
Here we go. Stand by. Look.
By golly, it is gone. It just disappeared. Bang, like that.
Hold your watch up close to the mic, Paul, so it'll record.
Yeah. There isn't a sign of the lighter. The little stage on which Paul placed it is empty, and it should appear again in just a second if it really did work. 3, 2, 1.
It's back! It's back, Norm!
It worked! We made it! Oh, man, let's see if it's all right. Oh!
Now what?
Oh, the lighter. Oh, it's cold, Paul. Ooh, here. Take it, Paul. Take it. It's freezing cold.
What do you know? The darn thing's like a piece of ice.
Now, where the dickens do you suppose it's been in that 10 seconds?
No, wait, friend. That's not
right.
The payoff yet.
You said only in the future.
Listen.
And time caught up with it. It's back, but...
Hey, Paul, look. Where did that come from?
What?
There on the stage where the lighter was. Where'd that come from? In the middle of winter.
What is it?
Oh, it's a caterpillar, Paul. A brown and black caterpillar.
Well, where do you suppose it came from? It wasn't there.
I'll tell you where it came from, Paul.
What?
It came from the same place where the cigarette lighter went.
What are you talking about?
Well, feel it, Paul. Feel its fur. See? It's as cold as ice, too.
A caterpillar. A little brown and black caterpillar, the kind they call woolly bears. You know, a larva of the tiger moth, the Icaea Isabella. In the dead of winter and as cold as ice. Where did it come from? Huh? You want to know. Incidentally, you know, the old timers say that the woolly bear caterpillar is a weather prophet. If the brown bands on his fur are narrow, there's a severe winter ahead. If they're wide, it's going to be a mild winter. Maybe. This one, you could hardly see the brown bands. Tough weather ahead, that's what the old-timers would say. But where'd she come from? She wasn't there when we put the cigarette lighter on the stage. When time caught up again, there she was. She? Sure, Isabella. I see her, Isabella. Don't you remember? Well, she was wriggling happily when she arrived from somewhere in the future. But as she warmed up, she seemed to go into a trance, almost a death-like trance. So Norman said, put her in the deep freeze. Maybe she'll come to again in the cold. So we put her in the deep freeze. And in half an hour, when we looked in at her, she was wiggling happily. At 10 degrees below zero, friend. Now, can you tie that? My goodness, she should have been frozen solid. Well, nothing special happened for a couple of days. That, you remember, was a month and a half ago, December 13th, 1948. Where were you on the night of December 18th? Saturday night, a week before Christmas. I'd been Christmas shopping in the afternoon, I remember. I came back to the laboratory to check up on some stuff. And Norman was there, fiddling with things. Hi, Norm, I said. How's Isabella?
You know something funny, Paul?
What's the matter with you?
Who, me?
You look so pale. You sick? Eat something? Disagreed with you?
Paul, Isabella's singing.
Singing what? Isabella's singing? You're dotty.
She's singing. The caterpillar's singing.
Not tap dancing, I hope.
I'm not kidding you.
Oh, cut it out.
Open the deep freeze and listen.
You've been at the C2H5OH?
I haven't had a drink since Thursday night.
Well, now, what?
Open the deep freeze and listen.
No kidding?
No kidding.
Well, we don't know where she came from. I won't be surprised at anything. Hello, Isabella.
Hey, don't do that.
What's the matter? Afraid she'll answer me back?
Well, I don't know what.
Hello, Isabella. I hear you singing.
I told you.
I don't hear anything.
Now, listen, Paul. I haven't lost my buttons. I've been hearing it all afternoon. I couldn't figure out what was doing it, and then I noticed it was louder alongside the deep freeze here. So I opened it up and stuck my head inside, and it was coming from her.
Yeah. What does it sound like, Norm?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of like A-E-I.
A-E-I? Didn't she say A-E-I-O-U and sometimes W and Y?
Now, don't rib me. I tell you, I heard it.
I think you better take a Christmas vacation, Norm.
I'm not,
no. I know, kid, I know, but listen. We've been playing around with some pretty deep cosmic secrets, you and me. We've managed temporal displacement, which nobody in the world has ever done, see? Maybe we both need a rest.
You know what I think, Paul?
What?
I think we've managed teleportation, too. And we don't know it.
Teleportation? You mean like Charles Fort talks about?
I mean transporting tangible objects from one place to another without any mechanical means.
Electronically?
I don't know, Paul. All I know is that cigarette lighter was someplace where it was awful cold. And it wasn't cold here in this room.
Well.
And where did that caterpillar come from?
I don't know.
It came from wherever that cigarette lighter went, Paul.
But where?
I don't know. Somewhere. And you know what? I'm going to find out where it came from.
You are? And how, may I ask you?
I'm going to modify this gadget of ours, this hypercucambulator, so it'll carry a man. And then, my dear boss, I'm going to sit down in it and have you send me out there somewhere in time and space and come back and tell you all about it.
That's all for tonight, bud.
What?
Come on, I'll take you out and buy you a drink.
I'm not fooling, Paul.
Okay, okay, you're not fooling, Norm. Get your hat and coat and come on. I prescribe hot-buttered rum.
Well...
Turn off the lights.
Will you listen to me for a minute?
Turn off the lights. I want hot-buttered rum.
Okay, okay.
Gosh, look out of that window.
The northern lights. Oh, they're really bright tonight.
They sure are.
Look how they pulse. Up, down. Up, down.
Norm.
Up, what?
Look at the deep freeze there in the dark.
What about?
You see it?
Light, Paul. Light.
I see it, Norm. It's right in step with the northern lights.
And the same colors. Red, red. Blue, blue. Up. Down. Up.
Coming
down.
From the deep freeze where our little friend Isabella was singing to you.
Now, what
hey,
do you...
Paul, listen.
I don't...
Listen.
We never did get that hot-blooded rum. We stayed there in the laboratory for a long time, listening to the voice of the thing in the box, endlessly repeating A-E-I-O-U, the vowel sounds of our speech, and watching the light that pulsed up from the deep freeze in perfect rhythm with the flickering of the northern lights we watched through the window. And we thought long, long thoughts that I don't remember any too clearly now. I do know we both of us thought of ways to perfect our little mechanism, our time machine. Our machine that brought back a little cold, brown and black caterpillar from somewhere. And when it was morning, and the lights had faded from the northern skies, we found that our machine was very different. The stage where we found the caterpillar was larger now. I had only a vague recollection of what had happened in the night. I said to Norm, Norman, I said, what did we do last night?
I don't know for sure, Paul.
Did we rebuild that thing? Make it larger?
I don't know. I think I dreamed I was working on it. I think I hit my finger with a hammer.
I see. Thumb's all bruised. Certainly looks it.
Well, nobody could have gotten in here. The door's locked.
The machine's certainly different.
This coil, I think. Look, it's rewound different. Did I do that?
My head hurts.
Yeah, mine too.
I don't get it.
I don't either. I wish I could.
Listen, Norm.
What?
Maybe we did change it.
But I... Well, how could we have done all that by ourselves?
I got an idea.
What?
Why, maybe... Isabella helped us.
The caterpillar? Oh,
let's see, shall we?
Open the deep freeze.
Well, I opened it. It was empty. There wasn't any brown and black caterpillar in the deep freeze. We took a flashlight and looked over every inch of it. We stood there and looked at each other for a whole minute. Norman said, well, I just shook my head. We went over and sat down. All of a sudden, I said, I found her, Norman. And here she was. There was little Isabella, the caterpillar, crumpled up, stone dead on the floor of the laboratory. And you know, caterpillars have little tiny paws. And one of Isabella's paws was the end of a long piece of wire that ran up to the generator coil.
How did she get out?
And I said the thing couldn't be opened from the inside. I said it was fastened down tight when I took the lid off just now.
But she did get out.
Maybe she did help us, Norm, I said. And he just sat there and stared at me. And I got up and put on my overcoat.
Where are you going? Where are you going, Paul?
I said, I'm going to find out something, Norm. Where I'm going, it's cold, I said. I know that, and I'm going to find out what's been going on and where that caterpillar came from. Norm goggled at me. I stepped on the stage of the machine that was to take me away somewhere in time and space. I said, Norm, turn it on. Finally, he reached over and touched the switch. He didn't say a word, and I braced myself. I nodded at him. Go ahead, I said. And he pressed the switch. And nothing happened at all. Nothing. Why?
I know, Paul, I know. It's daylight, and there aren't any northern lights.
Well, it was just as well. I had a chance to think about it a little, and I realized that just an overcoat wouldn't do me any good where I might be going. And so when it was dark night again and northern lights were flickering and dancing in the sky, I put on a high-altitude aviator suit that had its own source of heat supply. Norman shook his head as I got back on the stage. Nodded for him to press the switch. Cold. You've never been cold, friend. Dark. You wouldn't know how dark it can get. Then I was standing on an immense plain that stretched so far into the distance, a plain of snow and eternal ice. A dead, cold, white world with the blackest sky above me. And the northern lights reached from horizon to horizon. Even through the high-altitude suit, I could feel a biting cold. And I was afraid, shivering, abjectly afraid. The streamers of the northern lights reached down toward me and wrapped about me. I heard a sound of voices screaming into my mind. I could understand them. I wished heartily I'd never played around with cosmic forces. I yelled inside the heavy helmet. I yelled, Norman! Norman, bring me back! And there was nobody to hear me. No, I don't know where I was. Another planet. Maybe the North Pole. Maybe the lights were all around me. Maybe that's where it was. But it was the most terrible, awful, cold, lonely place you could imagine in 100 years. The lights, the flickering, living lights crawled over me and beat at me. I could almost understand what they were saying. And then, a crash. A sudden blackness. I was standing again in the laboratory I'd left only a few short seconds ago, and Norman was tearing at the fastenings of my suit and beating at me with both hands. I wondered what in the world he was doing until I got the helmet off. He was brushing caterpillars off me. Thousands of cold, freezing cold, brown and black Isabella caterpillars. I was in bed for a week or more, I don't know how long. Wherever it was I'd been, I'd nearly frozen to death in those short seconds. And at last, I was able to come back to the laboratory. I sat there that night with Norman. And outside the windows, the northern lights were brighter than they'd ever been before. Purple, green, yellow. Black lights, even. And there was a new rhythm tonight. A kind of code. Almost words. Thoughts. Not quite formed, and yet curiously disturbing. Norman, though, didn't seem to be as disturbed as I was. He just sat quietly and looked at me.
Where did those caterpillars come from, Paul?
I don't know. Where I was, that's all I know.
Did they attack you, or?
I don't know. They came from the lights.
The lights?
The northern lights. Where are they, Norman?
The caterpillars?
Yes. Where are they?
In the deep freeze, where Isabella was.
Poor Isabella.
What's the matter with you, Paul?
I'm listening.
Listening to what?
Don't you hear them?
I don't hear anything.
Don't you?
I don't hear anything.
Well, listen. Listen.
I don't hear anything.
Turn on the recording machine. I want to see if we could pick up their voices.
There isn't anything.
Turn it on. Turn it on. I want a recording. Quick. Quick, Norman. They're talking to us. Listen, friend. I want to play you another recording. This is what came out of our tape recorder that night when I was listening to the voices. And Norman couldn't hear anything. Just listen.
I still don't hear anything, Paul.
Be still. Listen.
I tell you,
listen.
I...
Listen.
What's that?
Look at the V3s.
The top's coming open. Look at the light around it, Paul.
Be quiet. Watch.
How did they... Good Lord, look. The caterpillars are coming out, Paul. Look at them. There's millions of them.
Be still, Norman.
But Paul, your voice...
Be still, I said.
What's the matter with your voice?
We want to talk to you.
You what? You said we.
Why, of course, Norman. We.
Who for the...
It is Paul's voice, Norman. Paul's voice. Voice. But it is not Paul speaking. Listen. We speak to you.
Paul!
Not Paul. We, the people of the lights. We from the cold. We are speaking to you with Paul's voice.
I tell you that...
Paul's voice will tell you what to do when the time comes, Norman. We go to the machine now. Paul's mind is ours for a little time now. We go to the machine. The machine that brought us to your world from the world of the lights.
Who are you? Who?
The people of the lights. To take over this world of yours. Only this world of yours is so hot. We must have the cold world. And we know how to make it cold.
What's the matter, Paul? Paul!
So hot.
No, no.
Quick, Norman. Turn on the machine. Send us to places in your world. No, our world. Hurry. So hot. Hurry. So hot.
Paul!
Hurry. Hurry. Turn on machine.
That's the end of the recording. No, I don't know. I don't have any recollection of it at all. But the recording's there, isn't it? That must be what happened. Anyway, when I woke up, Norman was gone, and there were no caterpillars in the place here. And our machine that took people and things away into time and space, was wrecked. I don't know what became of it. You heard what they said about my voice. They're going to take over this world and make it a cold world, like the one they came from. Whatever that is. And wherever they went. No, I don't know where they went, where the machine sent them. I do have ideas. Yes. Are you cold? It's freezing in here. And just for example, you read the papers? Look at the newsreels? Did you see the pictures of the snow in Los Angeles? In subtropical Los Angeles, where it hasn't snowed for so many, many years? I wondered about it, too. I wonder if anybody saw any brown and black woolly bear caterpillars in Los Angeles. Larva of the tiger moth I see, Isabella.
The title of today's Quiet Please story is Northern Lights. It was written and directed by Willis Cooper. The man who spoke to you was Ernest Chappell.
And my laboratory assistant, Norman, was played by Dan Sutter. The voices of Isabella and her friends was that of Cecil Roy. As usual, music for Quiet Please is played by Albert Berman. Now for a word about next week. Our writer-director, my good friend, Willis Cooper.
Thank you for listening to Quiet Please. For next week, I have a story for you that comes from the steel mills out South Chicago way. It's called Tap the Heat, Bogdan.
And so, until next week at this same time, I am quietly yours, Ernest Chappell.
And now, a listening reminder. How are your predictions of things to come? What's your batting average? Compare your average with a man who has made predicting his business. Listen to Drew Pearson tonight on ABC. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.
WJZ, New York's first station, AM and FM. Stand by now for inside news and startling predictions by Drew Pearson, one of the most famous reporters in America. See the amazing new Benrus Endurable Watch. Stronger, really shock-resisting.
Quiet, Please. Untuned to yesterday from the 30th of January, 1949 on ABC. Co-starring in that broadcast was Daniel Sutter, who played the laboratory assistant. As star Ernest Chappell mentioned, Sutter only occasionally acted on radio. He was primarily known in the radio business as a director, and his credits run the gamut, like broadcasts of the religious program The Eternal Light, the NBC Story Shop, the All-American Sports Program, and most notably X-1. Sutter directed over 80 broadcasts of NBC's premier science fiction show. This is an hour of sci-fi on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for an episode of X-1, though not directed by Daniel Sutter, called The Coffin Cure, an NBC episode from November 21st, 1957.
Countdown for blast-off. X-5, 4, 3, 2, X-1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents X-1. Tonight, The Coffin Cure by Alan Norse. But first, hear this. The scene of America's first Thanksgiving celebration. The top Big Ten football game of the day. One of the most unusual excursions on which a radio audience has ever been taken. These are just a few highlights of the weekend Monitor has planned for you. To help set the mood for the coming Thanksgiving holiday, Monitor takes you on a visit to the banks of the James River at Berkeley Plantation, Virginia. The scene of America's first Thanksgiving celebration more than 300 years ago. For sports fans, Monitor takes you to Michigan Stadium at Ann Arbor for the big Michigan-Ohio State football game. And for everybody, a most unusual listening experience as Monitor takes you behind the walls of Leavenworth Penitentiary. You'll learn of this famous prison's operation from Warden C.H. Looney. Sit down to lunch with its inmates. Learn from them how confinement behind prison walls affects a man. Learn of their opportunities for rehabilitation. There'll be celebrities, music, news, and sports. All on Monitor all weekend long, beginning Friday night over most of these NBC stations. Now, X-1, and tonight's story, The Coffin Cure.
I saw the headlines on the way downtown in the morning. Common cold cured. And sure enough, there was his picture. Chauncey Patrick Coffin. The newspaper ran on deliriously. Coffin nails lid on common cold. No more coffin, states co-finder of cure. Sniffles sniped. Single shot to save sneezers. There was no doubt of it. I've always said that the man who finds the cure of the common cold would be the greatest hero in medical history. And if I could have gotten my hands on Dr. Chauncey Patrick Coffin at that moment, I would have torn him limb from limb. Almost did about a half an hour later at the laboratory.
Philip, there's no sense in getting excited.
It's idiocy, blind, screaming idiocy. Coffin, you're out of your mind. Can't you see what you've done? It was my idea in the first place, and Jake and I have been pounding our heads on the wall for 8 solid months, and you go sneak into publication a full year before we have any business.
Now, Philip, you...
Now, how about that, Jake? Did you see the morning papers? This thief not only steals our work, he splashes it all over the countryside in red ink.
Now, C.P., you shouldn't have done that. After all, we've hardly had an acceptable period of clinical trials.
Oh, nonsense. Philip, you had the worst cold of your life when you took the vaccine. Have you had any since?
No, of course not.
Now, Jacob, how about you? Any sniffles? How about those 600 students from the university? Did I misread the reports on them?
No, 98% cured of active symptoms within 24 hours. Well, of course, it's only been a month.
Now, gentlemen, be reasonable. Think positively. There's work to be done, a great deal of work. Press conference in 20 minutes. Drug houses to consult with. Gentlemen, we've won the greatest medical triumph of all time. The conquering of the common cold. We'll go down in history.
He was right on that point, at least. We did go down in history. Of course, it was the biggest story of the year. In medical circles, it was called the Coffin Multicentric Upper Respiratory Virus Inhibiting Vaccine. Newspapers just called it the Coffin Cure. The men from the government bureaus came first, and then 17 pharmaceutical houses descended with production plans, cost estimates, colorful graphs. One laboratory promised a vaccine in 10 days. Another guaranteed it in a week. The first actually appeared in 3 weeks and 2 days to be soaked up in 2 hours by a thirsty sponge of cold, weary humanity. Express planes were dispatched to Europe, Asia, Africa with a precious cargo. 1 million needles pierced 1 million hides, and with a huge convulsive sneeze, mankind stepped forth into a new era. There were abstainers, of course, there always are. One of them, for example, my wife, Ellie.
Now, Phil, you can talk all you want to. I don't want any cold shots.
You've had this cold for 2 solid months now. There just isn't any sense to it.
I don't want any cold shots.
But why not? Just one little needle. You hardly feel it.
You know I don't like needles.
Oh, Ellie.
Oh, why don't you leave me alone? Go take your nasty old needles and stick them in people that want them.
I woke up once that night and listened to a parade of sneezes from Ellie. I rolled over and frowned to myself. It was ignominious in a way. The wife of one of the cold cure discoverers was refusing the fruit of all those months of work. When I woke up in the morning, I thought I was suffocating. Hey, Ellie. Ellie, I'm choking. Ellie, what did you do? Hey, what's burning? Hey, Ellie, somebody's burning down the house.
Oh, what are you talking about? It's just the toast. I burned it.
Well, it's awful. What's happened here?
I'm making breakfast.
But don't you smell it?
Of course not. It's just bacon and eggs and toast.
Oh, you mean you don't smell anything strange?
I don't smell anything, period, with this cold.
But, did you put on fresh perfume this morning?
Before breakfast? Don't be ridiculous.
Not even a drop?
Not one drop.
This must all be in my mind, or I'm imagining things, that's all. I'm working too hard. Hey, wait a minute. Ellie, give me my hat. I've got to get down to the laboratory quick.
You're listening to The Coffin Cure, tonight's attraction on X-1. 11 million victims, adults and children alike, beg you to break the grip of the crippler, arthritis. Advances in medical science have made possible the cure of many diseases. But further research is necessary to break this grip, to find the cause and the cure for man's oldest, most crippling disease. Let's give arthritics a chance. Help relieve their suffering now, and help find the cure that will end this terrible disease for all time. Your contributions will support a double-barreled attack on arthritis, a fight in which more research and better treatment are brought to bear on one of the great menaces to our nation's health. Please join the campaign to destroy arthritis, to break the grip of the crippler. You can do your part. Please give to your local arthritis fund. Now back to X-1 and the Coffin Cure.
It grew worse all the way downtown. I fought down nausea as the smell of damp, rotting earth rose from my front yard. The neighbor's dog dashed out to meet me, exuding the great-grandfather of all dog odors. The crowded bus was a nightmare. I could tell that the bus driver had salami for supper the night before. My stomach began to roll, and I barely made it off the bus. I met Jake Miles at the laboratory.
Did Coffin come in yet?
Oh, he's in there. He's got the door locked.
You got it, too?
Yeah. Coffin!
Now, don't come too close.
You got it, too? When did it start for you?
Right after supper last night. I thought I was going to suffocate. I got up and walked the streets all night. What a stink.
I got it sometime this morning.
But I don't understand. Nobody else seemed to notice anything.
You forget something. We were the first three to take the coffin cure, remember? You and me and Jake 2 months ago.
But what's happened? Those foul smells everywhere. Every odor in this town has suddenly turned foul.
Magnified, you mean? I don't think the smells have changed any.
Well, but what is it then?
Our noses have changed, obviously. Look at our experimental dogs. They never had colds, and they practically live by their noses. Other animals all depended on their sense of smell for survival. They don't get colds either. The multicentric virus hits primates only, and it reaches the fullest power in man alone.
But I don't get it. Why should it smell this way? I haven't had a cold in ages.
Of course not. That's just the point. Look, why do we have any sense of smell at all? Because we have tiny nerve endings in the mucous membranes of our noses and throats. But we've always had the virus living there. Cold or no cold, it's always been there, except now, after the coffin cure. We got rid of the virus, remember? And now, for the first time, those nerve endings in our noses are just beginning to function.
You mean you think it'll get worse?
And worse, and still worse.
Now, we're all in this together, Phil. It was your idea in the first place. You said so yourself. You can't leave me now. You can't. You can.
You better answer your phone.
Hello. I'm busy, and I can't see anyone, and I can't... What? Oh.
What is it?
There's a line of students outside the building. They're waiting to see me. Oh, Jake, Phil, they'll hang me. You've got to help me.
Send down to the freezer and get all the live cold virus we can find. Get us some inoculated monkeys and a few dozen dogs.
But you've got to help me. You've got to help me.
And stop sniveling. You're the big publicity man around here. You're going to handle the screaming masses, whether you like it or not. We've got to find out how to catch the common cold again if we have to die trying. It was a futile struggle. We sprayed our throats with enough pure culture of virulent live cold virus to have condemned an ordinary man to a cold for life. We didn't develop a sniffle. We injected the virus hypodermically, intradermally, intramuscularly, intravenously. We drank it, we bathed in it, but we didn't catch a cold. We wore wet clothes and sopping shoes to work, but we never felt better in our lives.
I think you should all be locked up, taking a cold shower and then going out in the snow.
You don't understand, Ellie. We've got to catch a cold.
Why? Suppose you don't. What's going to happen?
We had 300 students march on the laboratory today. The smells were driving them crazy. They couldn't even bear to be close to their best friends.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow, we'll have them back and 300 more. And what's going to happen when 15 million people find their noses suddenly turning on them? Ellie, we just did too good a job. We just can't catch cold. We just can't crack it. Those antibodies are just doing too good a job.
Well, maybe you can find uncle bodies to take care of them.
Oh, now, look, don't make bad jokes.
I'm not making jokes. I don't care what you do. All I want is a husband back who doesn't complain how everything smells and who doesn't stand around in cold showers at 6 o'clock in the morning.
In the morning, Jake, Coffin, and I had a conference in the lab.
I don't go out there anymore. I can't see those students. I've begged for time. I've promised them everything but my upper plates. I can't face them again. I just can't.
We only have a few days left. There were 15 million antivirus shots given in the past 3 months, at least. Say, we don't come up with something, we're goners.
You know what I think? I think we've been prize idiots. We've gotten so rattled we haven't used our heads. And all the time it's been sitting there blinking at us.
What are you talking about?
Ellie said it this morning. Uncle bodies.
Oh, he's cracked. He snapped.
No, I'm dead serious. How many of those students do you think you can corral to help us?
600. Mm. They're out there in the street right now, a blood-seeking mob howling for a lynching.
All right, I want them in here, and I want some monkeys. Monkeys with colds. The worse ones, the better.
Say, do you have any idea what you're doing?
Not in the least, except that it's never been done before, but maybe it's time we tried following our noses for a while. Tidal wave began to break 2 days later. Only a few people here, a dozen there, but we could tell it was coming. At the laboratory, the doors were kept barred, telephones disconnected. Jake rigged up some small gas masks, but it didn't do much good. But the work went on in spite of the smells, and you have no idea what a truckload of monkeys smells like magnified 10,000 times. We had cold-ridden monkeys, sneezing, coughing, weeping, wheezing monkeys by the dozen. Culture trays bulged with tubes. Each day, 600 angry students holding their noses paraded through the lab, arms exposed. At the end of the week, half the monkeys were cured of their colds and couldn't get them back. And the other half had new colds and couldn't get rid of them. That meant we were on the right track. And then, 2 days later, Jake came into the laboratory triumphantly.
Jake, what's the idea of bringing that dog in here? I've got 6 nose plugs and they still don't do any good.
But look at that puppy. Look at it. Watch him carefully. Yeah, he sneezed. He's got a cold. That's the first dog in history that ever got a cold. And we've won.
I was the first volunteer. We injected the new serum in my arm and sat back and waited. We were still waiting 3 days later.
Well, it was a great idea. Just didn't work, that's all.
Where's Coffin?
He collapsed 3 days ago. He kept having anxiety dreams about hanging.
Well, I suppose we'd better just face it. Nice knowing you, Jake. Pity it had to end this way.
Well, it was a great try, old man. A great try.
Ah, yes. We will be remembered by an infuriated world holding its nose in vain. Nothing like going down in a blaze of...
Up? What's the matter?
In a blaze of...
Chew!
Phil!
Say it again!
Chew!
Oh, what a moment! Phil, we've won! Chew!
Now, just keep your feet in this warm bath, Phil, and drink plenty of hot lemon juice. You'll be all right.
You see, it was your idea, the uncle bodies.
Hmm?
We developed an antibody against the cold virus, and then we had to develop an antibody against the antibody.
Will they be able to make it fast enough?
Just about fast enough for the people to get good and eager to catch cold again.
Mm.
There's only one little hitch.
Hitch?
The stuff we made does a real good job, just a little too good. I may be wrong, but I think I've got this cold for keeps. Unless I can find an antibody against the antibody against the antibody.
Fred Collins again, and I'll have another word about X minus one in a moment.
Is your head buzzing with a feverish, stuffed-up feeling of a cold? Here's how to get relief.
Every second someone takes it for the miseries of a cold.
Bromoquinine brand cold tablets.
You have just heard X-1 presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features Galley Slave by Isaac Asimov. The three laws of positronic robots made it impossible to kill a human. But there was a loophole. Murdering a man after his death. Read it in Galaxy Magazine on your newsstand today. X-1 has brought you The Coffin Cure, a story written by Alan Norse and adapted for radio by Ernest Kenoy. Featured in our cast were Raymond Edward Johnson as Phil, Joseph Bell as Coffin, Harvey Hayes as Jacob, and Betty Kane as Ellie. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was an NBC Radio Network production.
There's excitement in the air at night, and Nightline brings it to you. Hear Nightline with Walter O'Keefe next on most of these NBC stations.
X-1 on Tuned to Yesterday from November 21st, 1957 on NBC. And that closes out this hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.